Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all the latest J2 and J3 news coming up soon as usual. I'm John Steele and joining me to talk about a very eventful round of J2 playoffs, it's Johnny Nicol. Johnny, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing not too bad. I think I know we talked in the summer about the PSG tour, but this is my first time on JTAP for a long time, so it's good to be back, and I'm doing pretty good. How about you, John?
Yes, all good, thanks, Johnny. I should say a happy Halloween. That the listeners can't see our costumes, thankfully, because we're audio only. But October the 31st is upon us. But I think, you were telling me it's round 12 of the J2 season since you were last on. Yeah, on JTA. So apologies for that, but I think we have had a few sort of scheduling conflicts that meant you couldn't be on sooner. Not least, of course, is your kind of big pod commitments where you've been going from strength to strength. So congratulations on that. You've been doing a sterling work for the pod as a whole.
Thanks very much. Yes, last week I was on with a guest as well when I was a co-host, which was a first for me. And yeah, last week, like tonight, there was only a couple of games to talk about, but we ended up talking for absolute ages. So hopefully we'll try and be concise, but I hope the listeners enjoy what we go on to produce tonight.
Yes, all good. Oh, that's the build up. That's the build up nicely dealt with, Johnny. Yeah, well, we better get into it then if you're ready. So We're going to talk about the two playoff games, the snappily titled round one of the playoffs in J2. So both of those games were played on Sunday afternoon. Helpfully, they overlapped with each other, with one game at 1 p.m. and one at 2. But we haven't really got time to discuss naming or scheduling. We better get straight into it. So, Johnny, first of all, a game that you watched in full, I think, at City Light Stadium. It was at Okayama 0, Yamagata 3 at full time. Now, a banner that I saw in the Yamagata end said something like, "Here comes a miracle." I think that might be overselling things just a little bit, but it was a stunning win for the away side in this match. They had a dream start in just the 5th minute when a talismanic forward, Akira Disaro, put them in front. He was sent clean through by a clever first-time through ball from Kota Yamada, and the Okayama goalkeeper Daiki Hota made a great save from Disaro initially, but the bald eagle was able to put in the rebound to make it 1-0. Then, 10 minutes into the second half, Yamada had the chance to put in a shot from just inside the box, but he just couldn't quite catch the ball correctly, and Okayama were able to clear the danger. At the other end, Thiago Alves, this is the Okayama one, went down quite easily in the box looking for a penalty, and I don't think that was the first time in the game that this happened. After a scramble over the ball, Mitch Duke was able to fire in a powerful drive that the Yamagata keeper Masaki Goto was able to palm away. And then Yamagata sealed the victory with two goals in the last 15 minutes. Firstly, in the 75th minute, time seemed to stand still as Ayumu Kawai was able to get to the byline and put in a cross for De La Torre to head back across the goalkeeper and into the net for 2-0. And 5 minutes after that, a corner kick was headed on by De La Torre for Thiago Alves, this is the Yamagata one, to volley home unmarked inside the 6-yard box. I think there were a few suspicions about offside on this goal, but after some deliberation, the referee pointed to the centre circle and the goal was given. So Okayama 0, Yamagata 3 was the full-time score. So the third-place team knocked out by the sixth-place team quite comprehensively in the end. Johnny, how did you see it?
Yeah, I think the first goal, that goal from Disaro, I think that made all the difference because, yeah, as you said last week, yeah, third versus sixth, the odds are kind of against third in a way, but sixth are away from home. There's a big crowd at Okayama, which can be a massive boost to the home side, but also if the away side go and do what Yamagata did, which is go in front early, they become a bit of a handbrake and the nerves and tension sort of transmit onto the pitch. And I think that's kind of what happened. You had an interesting contrast in styles with Yamagata's kind of neat passing and movement versus maybe a kind of more like rudimentary style from Okayama. There was a lot of kind of trying to get the ball into Mitch Duke up front. Mm. I think Okayama were back in their kind of 4-4-2 system for this because I'm not really sure what they were doing before when they went to that back three, which kind of seemed to involve making three of their defenders play slightly out of position. Mm. But yeah, they were quite comprehensively caught out for that first goal, just two passes, ball into Yamada, and he was really impressive, I think, in that kind of number 10 role, and he put Disaro in. Just And there's a few moments of controversy, I guess, before I come on to. One of them, which I think didn't make the highlights, was Di Zarro got a booking quite early on, and he then put in a second challenge not that much later, which I think falls into the category in J-League of it would probably have been a yellow card had he not been on a yellow card. And he kind of got away with that.
An orange card.
yeah. But basically, yeah, if there was a 10-minute sin bin, I think he might have been sitting in it. And yeah, as you mentioned, Yamagata got those two goals kind of late on to add gloss. And Okayama really kind of fell apart from a morale side. You know, you had Thiago Alves, you mentioned, sort of going down. He also started a bit of a melee by booting the ball off. I think it was Yudai Konishi was on the ground and then trying to act like he hadn't done it. And I think a bit like you mentioned with the Yokohama FC Oita a few weeks ago, they just sort of get caught up in moaning at the ref and shouting about this, that and everything, when realistically what they wanted is sort of, can the ref say, like, next goal is the winner kind of thing, because they know it had all gone wrong. But yeah, we were talking in the green room, Okayama finished third, they finished 8 points ahead of Yamagata. They were probably a double-digit point total above them for a lot of the season. So in some ways it does seem a bit harsh. You lose one game and you're out. But as you and Gary mentioned last week, Yamagata are the form team, and from that perspective it probably wasn't much of a surprise. So would you go along with that, John, or anything to add?
Well, yeah, when I was talking to Gary Irwin last week, you know, we were previewing these games, and literally as I was asking him the question, who's going to win, I realised I had no idea. You just don't know, and I think that's kind of the appeal of these playoff matches, right? And you would think, yes, the third place team at home has got this massive advantage of only needing to draw to go through. But then what makes it exciting is when the away team, the sixth place team, they scored early on, you know, and suddenly that advantage of being at home is wiped out. But the home team only needs an equaliser for the pendulum to swing back the other way. So I can kind of see the appeal without getting drawn into a wider debate on the format, yeah. But I think Okayama, something that Gary mentioned last week was, you know, their form heading into the playoffs not been that good. I think it's three defeats from the last four regular season games, right? And I think they just lost a little bit of momentum, maybe even belief, because I think for a long time they were sort of chasing the top two, right? They were riding Yokohama FC's coattails to try and get into that top two. And when it became apparent that was going to be impossible, I think they must have just, their heads just collectively dropped a little bit. There was no Stefan Mork for this game. I presume that's because he was injured, because he's been sort of used whenever he's been available this year. And I wonder if that perhaps contributed to Okayama being, shall we say, more rudimentary than usual. Because they're not the most free-flowing and expressive team at the best of times. But I think he's good at linking the play for them between the midfield and the forwards. That wasn't an option that was available. But yeah, Yamagata, one of these teams, I mean, I'm never surprised when Yamagata win a J2 game, because they've just got so many good forwards. I think them keeping a clean sheet is perhaps what surprised me in this game, you know, because that's been harder for them to come by. But I think when the margin of victory is 3 goals, I don't think Okayama can have too many complaints, can they? And I think something that James Taylor, co-host, was mentioning to me in messages was just they lost their cool, if you like, and like you said, they were arguing with the referee, that they weren't focused on the task in hand. And I think once that happens, it's you're playing into the other team's hands, aren't you? They were playing into Yamagata's hands a bit. So I do feel for them, because after watching the first episode of that 3-part Okayama documentary on DAZN and seeing how much it would have meant to the club to get promoted, it's sad to see them knocked out of the playoffs in a way. But you know, they only needed a draw to go to the next round, and they've been beaten 3-0. So you can't have too many complaints, I don't think. On Yamagata, I'll mention just quickly, this is another stat courtesy of James. I can't claim this one, but I think coming off the bench for Yamagata this season, De La Torre scored 9 goals, and Thiago Alves, the Yamagata one, 8 from the bench. So that they're the top two super subs in J2, I think, in terms of goals when coming on as a substitute. So that's kind of that really shows the strength and depth they have in terms of the sort of striking options, forward options. On Yamagata, Johnny, I know that you mentioned on Big Pod several times this season that sacking of Peter Klimovsky has been mentioned. You know, obviously he's Yamagata manager now, but was sacked by Shimizu, a season or two ago. So obviously Shimizu's campaign in J1's not gone too great this year, I think it's fair to say. So perhaps they are feeling a little bit embarrassed or a bit silly about sacking Kramovsky. But how about Akira Disaru? Because he's on loan at Yamagata from Shimizu. My question would be, why have they... He's obviously a good striker, we know that. Couldn't they have found a place for him at Shimizu with the struggles they've been having in J1? What are they doing letting him go on loan to Yamagata and leading them into the second round of the playoffs?
Well, I guess we're kind of recording probably at the same time that Big Pod's been recorded at, so I'm guessing that I think Sean Carroll's on this week, and Sean and Sam will probably be having a bit of a post-mortem on Shimizu, and I'll have my say kind of after the season. But yeah, Shimizu's problem is not their attack. You've got the top scorer in the league, and Thiago Santana is very much at the back, and I sometimes wonder how their front office sort of justify the money they spend on players for various positions while not like dealing with centre-back. And I think Disaro joined when they had Lotina was the coach, and he made his debut in central midfield, a kind of midfield three away to Kashima. And then, yeah, he just never... He got sub-appearances and he didn't get a goal, and he's clearly good enough to play in J1 if he can find the right team. But, yeah, Shimizu was just the wrong move for him, and interestingly, because he went from Kita Kyushu, and Daigo Takahashi was on loan from Shimizu to Kita Kyushu, he's also disappeared there. It's kind of one of these baffling things about J-League clubs' kind of signing policies. But, you know, one thing about Disaro, because he joined, I've got my kind of notes, it was the 29th of June, but I think that was when it was announced, and he probably started playing in July. I think this year, because the World Cup, the schedule was so front-loaded, but they didn't move the summer transfer window. So it's been very difficult for anyone who joined mid-season to kind of come in and make much of an impact. Disaro was right at the start, so he can put 8 goals in 17 games, whereas a lot of other players have only kind of played 10 or 12 games after going in the summer. So he's been undoubtedly the number one kind of impact player from the summer. He looked like a smash hit like going there. It was just a question of he's not played that much for the last year and a half. But him, and he's just got on so well with Klimovsky's system. Obviously, they didn't work together because Klimovsky was gone before Disaro joined. And I know he's a favourite of everyone on JTET. And it's like there was the booking, there was the potential sending off, there was a goal, he was involved in everything, as he always is. Like you can't miss him in the field. He's box office, isn't he? And I think with Klimovsky as well, I think Yamagata deserve a bit of credit, because they're a team that really should be challenging for the playoffs every year. But the Klimovsky's come in, it's probably not that kind of system. Probably works better at a higher level, if that makes sense. Like you've got better quality players already on the book. So, in fairness to Yamagata, they've given Klimovsky time, and I would guess even if they don't go up this year, he'll still be the coach next year, and they'll still be thereabouts next year. So I think Yamagata definitely, rather than sort of putting the boot into Shimizu, I think Yamagata deserve credit for targeting these two players and giving them the tools needed to do the job, and they're kind of reaping the benefits from it now, I think.
Klimovsky, from what I can gather on social media, where Yamagata have a pretty good, well-run Twitter account, sort of social media operation, Klimovsky seems super popular. Whenever there are new items in the club shop, he's often modelling them, in the photos. And, I think wherever he gets those kind of sort of pale, those dark blue shirts or black shirts from, they're regularly replenished. You know, he always has a fresh one for each game, or the existing one is freshly laundered for him. So I think he's, I agree. I think he's probably safe for next season then. Disaro is one of these players who I had in the kind of Cameron Jerome category, by which I mean a player who in the UK, in England, would score a lot of goals in the Championship, but then struggle whenever he got into the Premier League. But I think in Disaro's case, he's a proven J2 goal scorer, but in J1, I don't think he's, like you said, he's not really been given a fair shake, because he's played out of position, or he's not been given a chance to have a run at J1 level. So I'm fascinated to see where his career takes him. I'm sure Klimovsky and Yamagata would love to have him again next season, whether they're in J2 or J1. We'll have to wait and see what happens. But he's just a good player to watch. And one thing I really like about him is he's not the tallest, but he's really good in the air. He always seems to be positioned just right to get headers. You know, he kind of is good at getting away from defenders in the box. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's a really good example of how you don't necessarily need to be tall. You don't need to be like a giant to like win headers and score headers. So yeah, no, fair play to Akira Disaro, Peter Kromoski and Yamagata. And we should say commiserations to Okayama, because they have been, as you say, third and up there for the whole season. So to fall away in the playoffs is tough to take, I'm sure. Now, Johnny, in the next game, round two, Yamagata will be facing Kumamoto. That's after a stunning playoff at Kumamoto. It finished Kumamoto 2, Oita 2 in the slightly earlier kickoff on Sunday. Amazing finish to this game. Three goals scored after the 87th minute as Kumamoto just about made it through to the next round, but poor old Gary Irwin was made to suffer along the way. Never mind the finish, though, Johnny, there was a stunning start to this game as well, wasn't there, with Oita taking the lead inside pretty much the first 30 seconds. Now, Oita got to kick off. They played the ball back to the goalkeeper, Shun Takagi. He punted the ball downfield to the Oita left, where Masaki Yumiba played a low ball into the box, which was missed by Oita's onrushing Hiroto Nakagawa. But Kumamoto's keeper, Yuya Sato, had come out to confront him, so that when the ball ran past both of them, the goalkeeper was out of the game and the ball ran loose for Kohei Isa to tap it in. So Oita were in front, before even a minute was on the clock. I think it was Isa who had a chance to double the lead shortly afterwards with a header from a corner, but that was repelled by Sato, who was in the right place at the right time. At the other end, it was, of all people, Henry Iwaha, who had a good chance to equalise for Kumamoto, but that was saved by Takagi. Oita's Naoki Nomura had two brilliant chances to extend their lead in the last 5 minutes of the first half, and they both came from Oita's high pressing on Kumamoto's backline. For the first chance, it was Iwaha who gave the ball away when his clearance was charged down, but when the ball came to Nomura, he placed his shot against the inside of the post and it didn't go over the line. It came back out. For the second chance, Sato was quick off his line and he made a good save at close range from Nomura. So Oita were in front 1-0 at the break. The second half, based on what I saw, felt a bit like attack versus defence, because Kumamoto just had to go for it, didn't they? Koki Sakamoto got on the end of a chip from Sou Kawahara, but he just couldn't get enough power on his shot to trouble the goalkeeper Takagi. And then it was Sakamoto again who got free right on the byline inside the penalty area on the left, where he seems to pop up all the time, and he put in a fierce shot from that narrow angle, but it was tipped acrobatically over the bar by Takagi. Eventually, though, the goal that the Kumamoto fans were craving came in the 87th minute. A long ball from the goalkeeper Sato was flicked on by Shohei Aihara, who'd come on as a sub in the 75th minute and played a big role in what happened after that. Now, the ball was running through on goal. Oita's Yuta Koide had the chance to clear, but completely missed the ball when he slid in to clear the danger. That left Sakamoto one-on-one with the goalkeeper Takagi, and he went around the goalie and scored to make it 1-1. And then there was a pretty much pandemonium in the 92nd minute, Johnny. Kumamoto went ahead after a flowing counter-attack. A clearance, just a kind of hoof ball down the Kumamoto right from Masahiro Sugata. That seemed to surprise everybody because it stayed in play right on the touchline. Aihara collected it and then he held the ball up and played in the onrushing Tales. Tales fed Sakamoto, who was nearing the edge of the Oita penalty area. Aihara continued his run kind of around the corner, if you like, and Sakamoto played in Aihara, who just kind of passed the ball in off the post to make it Kumamoto 2, Oita 1. So Kumamoto were heading into the second round, but just for good measure, in the 19th minute, Oita equalised Brazilian centre-back Pereira with a pretty good left-footed finish from just inside the box. But yeah, that was in, you know, the added-on time of added-on time. So even though it was a nice finish, it didn't amount to much in the end. It finished Kumamoto 2, Oita 2. Johnny, you're going to have to make sense of this one for us, I think.
Well, you did a very good job of describing the goals. And yeah, I think we were both in agreement in the green room that defending was absolutely abysmal for both Oita's opener and Kumamoto's equaliser. I mean, to give Kumamoto a break, maybe it was in the first minute, and again, as we were talking about, there was a number of strange selections in the Oita side. One of them was bringing back Kohei Isa, who obviously repaid his coach's faith, and you'd like Hiroto Nakagawa was there, Kenshin Yasuda, who's not even in a professional contract. Shun Takagi was back. So maybe they weren't really expecting that, but it's still kind of Keystone Cops at the back. And then the Kumamoto equalizer, like, yeah, I mentioned that you were talking about the Yokohama FC Oita game and how much time wasting Oita did, but they only really started time wasting in that game when the clock hit 90 minutes. So as I only started watching this game live when it went half time in the Okayama game, and that was just after this goal had been scored. But you picked out Koide, like, what's he doing, trying to hoof it up and missing it? But why were Oita so exposed? Like, why do you, I know you can say, like, you know, that the best way to stop the opposition equalising is by scoring another goal, but you'd think they'd have more people back defending at that time, and it's just the manager must be tearing his hair out, like, to give away that kind of goal in the 87th minute of a playoff that you're otherwise going to win. Mm-hmm. That was just a hammer blow. And then I think Tales, I think he's been a bit of a difference maker when he's been fit, which has been very rarely, because Kumamoto, as we've seen, have an excellent like starting 11, but there's not a whole lot in the way of depth off the bench. And then the guys like Aihara and Tales coming on and making the difference is a real boost for them here. And yes, Sakamoto, I remember watching, he scored the opener in the 2-0 win over Gifu last year, which sealed the title. And then he's turned up with a goal and an assist. So he's clearly the man for the big occasion. Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the neutral would have probably got more out of this than either Kumamoto or Oita fans, who are probably like, tearing their hair out, biting their nails, everything. It was a real humdinger of a playoff, but despite the terrible defending, I think it was actually a pretty decent advert for J2 football and for playoff football. It was absolutely crazy. And then we also had, as I mentioned, the Thiago Alves inspired sort of melee at Okayama. I think before I say the name of the player who started it, I'm sure a lot of you probably know who it was. I think if you were to hand out sort of team sheets and say, right, there was a bit of a ruckus at the end of this game, who do you think started it? I think Mu Kanazaki would quite comfortably win a Patreon vote. And yeah, it was him who started that. I think, again, like the Okayama players, I mean, this is someone with a history of losing his temper a bit when things don't go his way. It just, I know they got the equaliser, but he just ended up wasting time and, yeah, getting riled up. Pereira was in there getting riled up. It didn't do them. They almost said it was payback from the Yokohama FC game. Kumamoto benefited from them losing it, but a nice bit of symmetry between the two games. Both involved sort of a lot of pushing and shoving and anger and aggression towards the end. I mean, yeah, that's kind of my take. Have you got anything else to add to what I've said, John?
Yeah, no, I think now and again in J2, a game comes along that just can't really be analysed in any. you know, sometimes, like with COVID, you can get a PCR test, which is like no results, like, you know, invalid. You know, something's gone wrong with the processing. Sometimes that happens with the games that we put into our kind of stats computer, and they can't make any sense of it. But I think. I think you're right. This game had a kind of brawl, which was in common with the Yamagata match, but also having an early goal for the away side, obviously coming after just 30 seconds. I think from Kumamoto's point of view, they'll be delighted that they were able to kind of overcome that and actually get the result they needed in the end. Because I think it's just a hammer blow, isn't it, to let in such an important game to concede early like that is tough. From Oita's point of view, I kind of go back to that chance just before half time when Nomura, who's a good finisher, that chance he had where he just hit the inside of the post. I think if that goes in, you know, if Oita had gone in at half time 2-0 up, then maybe there's a mistake in the defence, because Oita are always likely to make one. But then if they'd let in a goal in the second half, it would only have been 2-1. They'd still have been ahead. So that I think there'll be a lot of kind of what might have been kind of soul searching on their side, but for Kumamoto, it's fascinating that before the game, you know, you mentioned Sakamoto with a goal and assist, that's not hard to believe at all, but then Takahashi and Yuhi Takemoto, who players that I probably would have picked out in advance as like players to watch, they didn't really do too much, I don't think, in the game. But it was Aihara, who he hasn't started a game in the league all season. He's just been used as a sub, you know, exclusively, and then he's only scored twice in the 42 game regular season. Then he comes off the bench with 50 minutes left here and you know, sort of assists one, well, perhaps Yuta Koide should get the assist, really. But I think he you know, Aihara had a hand in Kumamoto's equaliser, and then he scores the second goal. That's kind of an amazing sort of cameo from a player who's definitely been, like you said, a bit part player this season. So, yeah, it was just one of those games that I think you just have to now and again sit back and you make a good point. I doubt any Kumamoto or Oita fans really enjoyed that game, you know, as it was being played out. But it was certainly fantastic entertainment for the neutral. And, yeah, I think Kumamoto will be working on doing some shape work, won't they, before the game on Sunday against Yamagata. And for Oita, a weird season, I think. They like Tokushima, having to contend with the Levan Cup early on was a problem. That gave them a lot of hard, you know, hard schedule to kind of get over. But they did come into the playoffs in pretty good form. Mm-hmm. I think them and Yamagata, two sort of form teams, weren't they? So yeah. I think that they'll be disappointed that they haven't got the job done against Kumamoto. But yeah, we should say well done to both teams on producing a very exciting game. And yeah, well done to Kumamoto on just about getting through to the next round.
I think it's probably worth mentioning, John, actually, what we're talking about in the green room. I think it was quite interesting about Oita. Like, we kind of mentioned that Sendai, Oita and Tokushima. I know it might be a bit raw for any Oita fans listening, but realistically, I know they finished the season well. I think they'd probably have a better chance of doing something in J1 if they stay down for an extra year, because you mentioned the Levan Cup. They've still got like a big bloated squad with a lot of kind of veteran players that are not really playing that often. And I think central midfield and attack, they have a lot of players like you mentioned, like Nomura, or there's like Shimoda. Shimoda and Goya weren't even in the squad. Like Shun Nagasawa, Watanabe, Masayama. They sort of fit into the category of very good J2 player. But if you go up to J1, then you need a bit more quality in your team than that. And I can't remember if we actually mentioned this on the pod or it was when we were chatting in the green room before. Like, Oita is very close to Fukuoka, but I think maybe like Oita's nice scenery in hot springs might appeal to our kind of demographic a bit more than up-and-coming 24 or 25-year-old footballers. So, I
don't know what you mean.
You know, I think Katen Osaka was there for, like, was it 6 years? And they're still playing that 3-4-2-1 that I don't really think Shimo Taira really wants to play. So he's proven himself, and I think they need to kind of gut that squad out and streamline it a bit. And then, yeah, I think that they will be thereabouts next year. Kumamoto, as we kind of mentioned, I think this is their time. If it's not this year, it's not next year. Whereas Oita, I think, do have that next year and the year after potentially to fall back on.
Yeah, I think that's fair comment. I think, you know, something else that we kind of alluded to before we started recording was a team that, you know, Kumamoto have got so many good players who will have been noticed this year. And will be the subject of, you know, transfer bids from bigger clubs that higher up the food chain, that, you know, that can pay them more money. Whereas I think Oita, they will be looking to kind of offload players and kind of rebuild, maybe streamline the squad for next year, mightn't they? And it's going to be interesting to see what that squad looks like, you know, when it comes to February next year. Real quick, Johnny, on this game, James Taylor was asking if you thought these games, that both games together, Were there any difference between what we might have seen in like regular season games? For example, was the pace more frenetic or faster? Or you mentioned we talked about both games had a bit of a bust up in them. So would you say the games are more confrontational, a bit more aggression, or a bit more pace, or was it just one of those things?
Well, I think the aggression is kind of natural from the nature of the beast, isn't it? It's basically a cup game. It's a knockout game, whereas in the league, you've got 42 games, so something in the middle of the season, like, of course, you don't want to lose, but you can come back from that. Whereas, you know, like, Okayama, when it started to get to 2-0 and then 3-0, it's like, well, you're having to play for, like, 15 minutes in front of your own fans, be, like, comfortably behind, and nothing's going your way. So I think the kind of frustration then kind of led to anger and things spilling over. I think, yeah, again, with Oita, because they've been ahead for, what, 86 minutes of the game, and suddenly there was 1-1 and they're out, and then it's 2-1 and they've got very little chance. And I think that was the sort of having the, like, you think you're having a game next week, but then suddenly that's taken away from you and your season's done. And probably someone like, for example, like Mu Kanazaki's put out with the greatest respect, a far higher level than this. Mm. It probably is quite hard to take that kind of situation, but when you're already kind of hyped up. So I think that the knockout nature makes it a bit more a bit more frenetic. And team like both Kumamoto and Okayama, the home team, were behind early on, so they needed to go out and score. I think I'd say for it's the nature of the beast, which I think I've said about three times now.
No, that makes sense. Well, I think it's frustration, isn't it? Like you said, when you're planning for something and it's not going your way. If I think back to the game last month now, I guess we're talking, or a few weeks ago, Yokohama's home game against Oita, when it got to the last few minutes and Oita were 3-2 up, it was the Yokohama FC players who were throwing the toys out of the pram. And getting involved in things that they didn't need to get involved with. They're wasting time. So I think you can kind of see, I think it boils down to how much is riding on that particular game, right? Whereas, in the regular season, there's another game. You know, it's only the very tail end of the season it became, this is a must-win game, or, you know, the team needs something. Whereas these playoff games, by design, there is something riding on each game, right? So, good to point that out, that I think that is one... If we go to a wider point just for a minute, I think there are too many J League games where there's not enough riding on it, I think. So having games where there is a lot, you know, it's a one-off game and it's easy to understand what's, you know, the consequences of not winning it, you know, it's good, I think. But yeah, it does lead to frustration for the players, I think. Yeah. Okay, Johnny, we'll do a quick preview of the next round, if that's okay. So logically enough, after round one comes round two. And this game is going to be played on Sunday this week, November the 6th. The kickoff is slated for 1:05. So it remains to be seen whether it will actually be 6 minutes past one, or I think it was 7 minutes past one of Kumamoto last time. So we'll see. But 1:05 is the official kickoff time. So it's going to be Kumamoto against Yamagata at the Egao Kenko Stadium in Kumamoto. So it's the fourth place team from the regular season hosting sixth. Difficult to call, or impossible to call, really, isn't it? In the regular season, I checked the results from the regular season games. Kumamoto lost 3-0 at home to Yamagata, but that was the very first home game for them back in J2. That was back in round two in February. So obviously they hadn't really found their feet or really got going. So in the reverse fixture, Kumamoto won at Yamagata 1-0 in round 26. In early July. So, Johnny, might be throwing you under the bus to ask you which team you think is going to win. So instead, I'll throw you a different question, if that's okay, courtesy of James Taylor. Does either of these sides, do you think, have enough to maybe go toe-to-toe with the 16th place J1 team if they get through to the final? Or would they both be in real trouble, do you think, in that game? Or you could talk about who you think is going to win if you have a favourite.
I'll answer the question with J1 first. I think any one-off game, as you've seen, like, you know, Kofu are 18th in J2, and they beat a few J1 teams from the well above the relegation zone. So, yeah, if Yamagata were to win, they would have knocked off third and fourth in J2, and their confidence would be flying. So they'd be with people like Dizarro or Yamada, who are really J1 quality, in my opinion. They would be a lively opponent. I think I mentioned on Big Pod last week, and it's probably worth repeating, because I know Kyoto Osaka are currently in the playoff position, but there's no guarantee it's going to finish that way. Shimizu are a potential playoff team, and Dizarro, as we mentioned, is on loan from Shimizu, so he wouldn't be able to play against them, which I think you mentioned that from the bench, then De La Torre steps up, but then who's to come on for him? I think that would be a potential game changer. Kumamoto, I was actually thinking about Gamba, because it's only 2 years ago that Gamba's under 23s beat Kumamoto 2-0. That was a Kumamoto with Kaito Taniguchi and Hikaru Nakahara. So I think as a Gamba supporter, that would show quite a come down, but it would also show how far Kumamoto have come in the last 2 years. I mean, the five teams that could mathematically be in the playoff would be Shonan, Fukuoka, Gamba, Kyoto, and Shimizu. So we don't really have enough time. It's difficult to analyse all of those potential opponents. But to simply answer James' question, yes, but both of those teams, Kumamoto and Yamagata, are more than capable of beating a J1 team in a one-off game, even away. The odds are very much against them, though, but I think they can do that. Mm. Would, What would you say about that, John?
No, I think I've learned the hard way over the years that it's dealing in absolutes when it comes to J2 is a tricky business. I think what we can say is we have a limited kind of historical data from this format of the playoffs, don't we? Because they've only had two previous versions where the 16th place J1 team has played the what I like to call the playoff winner, because I still think if you finish top of the pile from J2, you still won the playoffs, even if they force you to play the J1 team afterwards. Like I'm not having that the J1 team draws one game and is the champion of the playoffs. It's ridiculous. So, but in the two editions that we've had so far, the J1 team has won or drawn, right? So we don't have a historical precedent for the J2 team doing it. So part of me thinks, why not? It could easily happen, but then part of me thinks the system is clearly weighted to help out the J1 team. So it's really difficult, but I don't see why Yamagata couldn't beat Shimizu, like you say. I don't see why they couldn't beat Fukuoka or Kyoto either. So I think it's definitely doable. But if it were Shimizu and they were without if Yamagata were without Disaro, for example, I think that would be a tough ask. And I wonder if perhaps with Kumamoto, there's a sense that although obviously there are well-known players in the team, and whoever they play against would do their homework. Perhaps they're a bit more of an unknown quantity almost. To some extent, obviously Yamagata, there's this Kromovsky connection. There's quite a few. I think perhaps more well-known players, or that it's not much, but historically perhaps a bit more high profile. He'd been in J1 before. So maybe Kumamoto would have an element of surprise to some extent. But why not? I think the 16th place J1 team, if you think back to that Shonan Tokushima game for a couple of years ago, Shonan were absolutely bricking it going into that game. And it was only by sort of getting the ball in the corner and keeping it there that they were able to get the results. So yeah, why not? Yeah, I think we've got to think positive. Just real quick, Johnny. Without wanting to be mean, I think Gamba Osaka, one of the teams that could potentially be in that 16th place, playoff spot in J1. Of the four teams from the playoffs, of course, we've already seen Okayama and Noita go out. Which one of them would you prefer to face if it came to that, or which one would you want to avoid? But basically, I guess I'll refine the question. Would you rather have a game against Kumamoto or Yamagata if push came to shove?
I'd probably rather have a game against Kumamoto, because Gamba have had a bit of success like pressuring defenders. I think with the players like Juan Alano and Usami, I think could probably if we could win the ball high up against Kumamoto. I think Takahashi's had a very good season, but up against experienced players like Miura and Shoji, I think one thing to point out about Kumamoto, it's probably been, I know you talked about you've not really mentioned them an awful lot this season, but this is essentially the same squad that won J3, but with some players from university added in, and I think they brought in four players, like Aihara was one, and Ioha. Players who'd played in J2, but they came from Kagoshima and Gifu. And then they have added in Rei Hirakawa from FC Tokyo, but he's not very experienced. It's not a team with a lot of experience of playing against players like Takashi Usami, or, if I'm allowed to use the word shithousery, but people like Patrick or Juan Alano. It might sort of be you've got Murakanazaki, there's one player sort of bringing it, whereas you've got quite a few Gamba players able to sort of step that up. I think it might be just a step. It's probably famous last words, but I would feel more comfortable playing Kumamoto slightly than Yamagata. Although I would feel slightly torn, because I've really enjoyed watching Kumamoto play this year, which I don't really want to sound patronizing, because teams that are usually loathed outside their own fan bases are usually very successful. So I know Kumamoto haven't been successful, but I mean that as positively as possible. They've gone up. They haven't just splashed the cash. They've got a coach with a really good philosophy, a load of good young players who will be in J1 soon, even if their team isn't. So I think there's loads to like about both those teams, like Yamagata and Kumamoto. If I was to sort of say, I'd probably rather Kumamoto won it. But I think Yamagata, Klimovsky, Yamada, Disaro, Hiroki Noda used to play for Gamba. There's a lot of things to like about both these teams. So I'm a neutral. I'm looking forward to seeing this game, and I'm quite happy if either team win.
Good recovery, Johnny. That was a horrible question. So you've done well. Yeah, I've got something to pin on either team's dressing room wall now for the playoff. But just finally then, and this is a heavy one. But Mike Innes, Magic Mike Innes was asking. Do you think it's fair to say that this final is kind of like showcasing the best of the rest in J2, really? Because Kumamoto, they've been consistent all season, haven't they, and ended up finishing fourth. Yamagata a bit more up and down, but in form for the last couple of months of the season to finish in sixth. I mean, you mentioned the kind of playing style. One thing that came to my mind was I'm really looking forward to seeing the two kind of teams playing against each other, because they both play very attractive football. Mm-hmm. More or less. So do you think we can say these are the, outside of the top two, Niigata and Yokohama, who have been promoted automatically, these are the best two teams? Because obviously they made it to the second round of the playoffs. That makes them the best two, like, de facto. But what do you think?
It's a very heavy question, because
Mike doesn't mess around. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. To be honest, because there's a lot of talk about like fairness, especially with, like, as we've mentioned ad nauseum, the 16th place just getting the one game at home from J1. But I think the J2 teams, I think we can compare, because they've just come from a 42 team season where they've played the same teams home and away. So the fairest thing would almost be to just promote Okayama, or Okayama go straight into a two-legged playoff for the J1 team. So I can't really make an argument that Okayama are not the third best team, because that's where they finished. And if you look at the league, like, fourth, fifth and sixth are quite close together in points, whereas Okayama are a bit further. So Okayama's style is not as pleasing the eye, but over the 42 games, it's been effective. And if we're realistic, performance in a league is more like predictive of being good at the league higher, rather than sort of Yamagata being around eighth or ninth for quite a bit of the season, then going in a good run and essentially winning a couple of cup games. So I'm happy to answer Mike's question by saying these two showcase a very good brand of football, or very good brands of football, and they have forward-thinking coaches and a lot of talented players. But Okayama, and Kiyama is also a good manager, and they've got good players too. They might go about things a different way, but yeah, over 42 games, they have been the best team. So I can't really say yes to that without Okayama being in the playoff final. Can I boomerang that back to you, John?
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing, because my mind goes towards, like, who do I, of the four teams that have ended up in the playoffs, who do I think would do better in J1 next year, were they to go up? And the funny thing about that is, I totally agree with everything you've said about Okayama and Kumamoto, but I still think, I was kind of imagining, I feel like Okayama would find it hard going in J1 if they went up, because I think they would not necessarily, because they don't have the experience of being in J1 before, I think they might find it hard to recruit the right players that they would need. And I'm not sure if their wage structure would allow them to build such a competitive squad. For Kumamoto, I think some of the players that we've talked about in the pod have done so well this year that they might even be snapped up by other clubs anyway, even if Kumamoto were to end up going all the way. So in a weird way, I'm left thinking that perhaps Oita and Yamagata, despite finishing fifth and sixth, would be better placed in J1 next year, because they have the experience of being in J1 historically in the past. But I suspect that's just my gut feeling and doesn't stand up to any scrutiny. I mean Okayama, they've been the third best team, haven't they? Like you said, the league table shows that. But I think they would have to evolve their play style quite a lot had they been. Oh no, there's too many verb tenses here. had they been promoted this year, they would have had to bring in a lot of new players, but also probably a slightly different style of football. I think that might have given them a really tough assignment for a first season in the top tier. Whereas I think Yamagata could go up and play more or less the same way. And I think the same is true for Kumamoto, although they might have to do it by replacing a lot of players or some key players. So I'm not answering the question, I'm just talking around it. I think, yes, Okayama have been the best team in J2, But my caveat is I'm not sure that would translate necessarily to giving them the best chance of survival in J1 were they to make it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's quite tough because you think last year, like, Kyoto and Jubilo ran away with it, and at the moment they're both in the bottom three this year.
So doesn't bode well.
It's different. We mentioned as well, like, you know, Yokohama FC, Niigata, and if the third place team does go up, it's going to be difficult for anyone to, you know, if you get teams like Shimizu, Gamba, Fukuoka, Shonan, they're all wily enough teams, it's not going to be easy for anyone going up.
I think another thing as well is if you're automatically promoted, especially if you do it with a few games, like a couple of games to spare, like, you know, the phone calls start and the contract negotiations start, like, almost imminently. Like, this is kind of an off-piste example, but, like, Yokohama FC, all of their promotion goods and merchandise was, like, ready to go. Mm. Like, they were giving us T-shirts when we went into the stadium for the last game. So it's not hard to imagine that other things behind the scenes, like, the wheels are in motion there as well. Mm. So when a team gets promoted through the playoffs, even if the difference is a month, you know, that's quite a long time to actually be getting in touch with players and getting things sorted. You know what I mean? We've talked before that there's a really long gap this year between seasons, right? Because the season's finished exceptionally early. But I think even then, there's going to be a manager or two at the start of next season who tries to get away with saying, we didn't have enough time to prepare, or the squad's undercooked, or I haven't got the players that I need. So, I think maybe when you were a J2 side to win the playoff final and go into J1, I think that will be something that will be an issue. It's like, you're a month behind everybody else in terms of preparation. Having said that, well-run clubs would have a kind of parallel, you know, plan in place, wouldn't they? But I think it's difficult to phone up players and say, oh, we might be in J1. Would you like to come play for us? Oh, when will you know? Oh, not for another month.
Yeah.
You know, well, another offer might come in, you know, from another club or whatever. So, yeah, it's difficult. But I think... Yeah, one thing we can talk about another time, John, is that gap does seem to be getting a bit wider, doesn't it, between the top of J2 and the bottom of J1. So we'll wait and see. It's going to be a fascinating game on Sunday. I hope everybody who has a chance to watch it enjoys it. And I think Kumamoto and will be working on their defending, won't they, this week? But Yamagata also a bit more front loaded. Is it fair to say?
So yeah,
should be some goals and some excitement. I would imagine. Okay, Johnny, I think we've jinxed it. We jinxed it there. So thanks for coming on. It's really, really good to talk to you again.
And thanks very much, Johnny. It's good to be back. And hopefully we have a great game this weekend, and then next weekend the J2 team goes and gives a very good account of themselves against the J1 side.
Yes, and let's hope Gamba or Osaka are nowhere near that conversation yes. at that joint. Yes, right. No, thanks a lot, Johnny. It's much appreciated. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, everyone, well, that's all for the J2 section of the pod for this week. Thanks to Johnny for his time and his analysis. Also, thanks for waiting for me patiently while I was late to get on the Skype call tonight. Please stay tuned. In a moment, Magic Mike Innes is going to be on hand. He has all the latest J3 news from a pretty topsy-turvy round of fixtures coming up in a moment. Thanks for listening to the pod and downloading us every week. We really appreciate it. And thanks especially to the patrons who support us financially. That's much appreciated as well. But please stay tuned. The Short Corner with Mike is coming up next.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in round 31 and the midweek catch-up game, as well as previewing the round 32 matches coming up this weekend. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. The J-League have announced details of club licences for the 2023 season, which in effect serve to determine a club's eligibility to play in a particular division. The main focus of attention has been Iwaki FC, current J3 leaders, who the league say have been awarded a J2 licence for next year and therefore will be able to take up a position in the higher division if they finish in the top two. Iwaki's neighbours Fukushima United have also gained a licence to play in J2 for the first time. Indeed, the only J3 clubs not to be awarded such a licence are Azul Claro Numazu and Tegevajaro Miyazaki, who remain eligible to play only as high as J3. Still, positive news for Numazu, who have, over the course of the year, successfully addressed concerns surrounding their ability to comply with floodlighting requirements. When it comes to the clubs looking to gain promotion into J3 from the lower tier JFL, the J-League say they've conditionally approved for membership five clubs: Reinmeer Aomori, Vietane Mie, FC Osaka, Nara Club and Verspa Oita. There are three conditions which must each be met: to finish in the top four of the JFL, to finish among the top two of those clubs mentioned, and to have an average crowd of more than 2,000. The JFL season is set to conclude on Sunday the 20th of November, and as things stand, FC Osaka and Nara Club look well placed to meet those conditions, especially in the light of Nara having attracted an attendance in excess of 14,000 for the recent visit of Suzuka Point Getters. Of course, I'll be reporting in future episodes on how all this plays out. Also looking ahead to J3 2023, FC Ryukyu have announced the appointment of Kazuki Kuranuki as successor to departing coach Nacho Fernandez. Kuranuki, who's 43, has spent 2022 as head coach at the club, working underneath Fernandez and previous incumbent Tetsuhiro Kina. Prior to that, he had various positions on the staff at Tokushima Vortis, having been a player at Tokushima and Vanfore Corfu, among other clubs. Ryukyu also say they've released midfielder Kohei Kato and defenders Keigo Numata and Takashi Kanai as they begin preparations for life in J3, while fellow relegated side Iwate Gurugia Morioka say they've let go two key players in captain Yusuke Muta and left-sided midfielder Taisuke Nakamura. Iwate have also stated they've terminated the contract of young defender Paul Bismarck Tabinas, caught driving while under the influence of alcohol in the early hours of Saturday the 29th of October. Now onto the action, and in the afternoon of Thursday the 27th, a regular working day in Japan, Tegevajaro Miyazaki staged the rescheduled match against Ehime FC, the first home fixture for Tegevajaro since the passing of Masato Kudo. On an emotional occasion for all at the club, it turned out to be a thrilling game by which to commemorate Kudo, with three goals in the first 11 minutes. Miyazaki went in front when Ehime veteran Ryota Moriwaki fluffed a pass attempting to play out from the back and, in trying to make amends, served only to deflect Kenta Okuma's shot beyond the reach of stand-in keeper Shugo Tsuji. Soon afterwards, the visiting back line was left exposed in a 3-on-2 counter-attack, which ended with Yudai Tokunaga threading a pass for Tomoya Kitamura to make it 2-0, a first goal since 2019 for the ex-Roasso Kumamoto forward. Fielding a team with fully 11 changes to the starting lineup from the side that lost at Iwaki in round 30, essentially their reserves, Ehime nevertheless responded quickly to pull one back through Makito Yoshida, left in space to finish smartly from 15 yards following Shunsuke Motegi's short corner. And in the 34th minute, Ryo Sato crossed for Tomoya Osawa to dispatch a bullet header and draw the away side level. 2-2 at the end of an action-packed first half, but Tega Vajaro went back into the lead just before the hour, a passing move across the penalty area leading to Tokunaga laying it off for Yuta Shimozawa to blast home a shot from 20 yards. But with the clock ticking over into the last minute, Toki Yukutomo glanced in a delightful near-post header from Takanori Mayano's cross to tie things up again for the mighty Mikans. And the teenager has now scored 3 times in 5 substitute appearances, together totalling just 50 minutes on the pitch. Final score, Miyazaki 3, Ehime 3. A respectable Thursday afternoon crowd, only just shy of 1,000, turned out to remember Tega Vajaro's star player. Ehime, as ever, played their part in a fine game of football. The schedule then moved on to the weekend and round 31, which kicked off with one game on Saturday the 29th. YSCC Yokohama were lacking in possession and chances at home to Fukushima United, but J3's bottom side were superior where it really counts. They went ahead just before half-time, Ryotaro Yamamoto picking up the ball in midfield and finding Atsushi Kikutani, who took advantage of the space afforded to him by a hospitable Fukushima defence by dinking a finish past Kaito Yamamoto. And YSCC scored again 10 minutes into the second half, Loris Tinelli and Hiroto Miyauchi exchanging passes before Miyauchi hit the post with a right foot shot and Tinelli reacted quickest to head home the rebound. Fukushima had a couple of near misses, a powerful Shoki Nagano header tipped over by Ryosuke Sagawa and a long-range shot by Kazuki Dohana that thumped against the woodwork, but couldn't turn their half chances into goals. Final score, YSCC 2, Fukushima 0. A 7th win of the season and a welcome clean sheet for Kei Hoshikawa's team, starting to look more dangerous with the addition of Tinelli, while Fukushima are 5 without a win and struggling for goals. Extra time. The other 8 matches were on Sunday the 30th, and for perhaps the first time this season, there were signs of a classic J-League collective stumble. Multiple teams seemingly unable to cope with the pressure of taking the steps necessary to achieve promotion. To that end, front runners Iwaki FC led the way, succumbing to defeat at Tega Vajaro Miyazaki, for whom Keigo Hashimoto netted the only goal of the game in the 16th minute, when he chased down a long ball out of defence, harried Tetsuya Yonezawa out of possession, and lashed a shot past Daiki Sakata. Iwaki, with the team configured by Hiromasa Suguri in an uncharacteristically experimental lineup, missed multiple chances through front pairing Daigo Furukawa and Hiroto Iwabuchi, and found homekeeper Kenta Ishii on outstanding form to keep them out, most notably his brilliant diving saves to stop goal-bound headers by Kaina Tanimura and Daiki Yamaguchi. Final score, Miyazaki 1, Iwaki 0. A ground-out victory by Tega Vajaro, who climb back up to 11th. Iwaki's 4th defeat of the season, but they remain clear leaders. Could second-placed Fujieda My FC take advantage of Iwaki's slip-up as they travelled to Gainare Tottori? Well, only just as Fujieda needed to score in the 94th minute to claim a point. In fact, the game looked to be heading for a goalless draw until Tottori turned the screw in the 83rd minute when, following a corner kick, Daichi Ishikawa first had a scrambled shot cleared off the line by a desperate lunge from Ryota Iwabuchi, and then headed home Corky Ishii's flighted ball back into the box. The equaliser came through the unlikely figure of substitute defender Kaito Kamiya, who picked up on Ishikawa's headed clearance of an Akiyuki Yokoyama cross, advanced into the area and curled a sweet left foot shot inside the far post. Final score, Tottori 1, Fujieda 1. A disappointing end to the game for Gainare, who went toe-to-toe with a promotion challenger. Who knows how crucial this point may be for my FC. So, Iwaki lost, Fujieda scrambled a draw, and at home to Ehime FC, third-placed Kagoshima United's defeat means they only have a single point to show for their last three matches. This was a game which followed a roughly similar trajectory to Miyazaki against Iwaki, in that Kagoshima missed a hatful of chances but couldn't find a way through. Yuto Kide hit the post with a low shot, and Koki Arita will have nightmares about his failure to hit the target when presented with more or less an open net following Daisei Suzuki's disastrous ball across his own goal. At the other end, Ehime's Takumi Sasaki did have a free kick tipped onto the bar by Fuma Shirasaka as early as the fourth minute, and the visitors grabbed the game's only goal with 14 minutes left, Sora Ogawa beating off the challenge of Jin Hanato to glance Taishi Nishioka's corner inside the far post. Pushing for an equaliser, Hanato then had a curling shot headed off the line by Shuma Mihara, but it wasn't to be, and the game ended Kagoshima 0, Ehime 1. This downward spiral by Naoto Otake's team, meaning if results go against them this weekend, they could be 6 points outside the promotion places with two games to play. Ehime consolidate in eighth. One promotion challenging team, however, did meet with success, and Matsumoto Yamaga are running into form at exactly the right time. Watched by the biggest J3 crowd of the season, 15,912, their Shinshu Derby victory over deadly rivals AC Nagano Parseiro means it's three wins in a row for Hiroshi Nanami's side, who go third, level on points with second-placed Fujieda. This was a match played at a frantic pace, Yamaga getting their noses in front in the 26th minute when Kazuhiro Sato floated in a corner, Kojiro Shinohana's half-volley was blocked by Issei Oichi, and Ayumu Yokoyama was on hand to fire in from a tight angle. Yuki Stealth's hard-working, mobile Parseiro drew level 18 minutes into the second half when Yuki Morikawa led a charge down the left, Reo Yamanaka hit the bar from close range, and Naoki Sanda bundled the rebound over the line. Moments later, Yamanaka had a clear shot from 10 yards out with only keeper Victor to beat, but couldn't hit the target. And with 5 minutes to go, Nagano were punished for their profligacy, as Paolo Junichi Tanaka released Lukao, who advanced on goal and somehow squeezed his shot beyond Oichi and inside the far post. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Nagano 1, and Yamaga have clawed their way back into contention, only outside the top two now on goal difference. Parseiro gave it their all, but remain seventh. Elsewhere, FC Imabari move into fifth following their win at Katare Toyama. After scoring the opener in the 17th minute, Imabari's Marcus Indio revealed a wristband decorated with the name Ralph as a reference to the team's Dutch striker Ralph Soyntjens, diagnosed with a tumour in May, having been in Japan for barely 6 weeks. Indio's goal came on the counter-attack, receiving a pass from Kanta Chiba and slotting the ball past the exposed Genki Yamada. The first half ended in dramatic fashion. Junya Imase firing home a loose ball following a corner to equalise for Katare, who then went ahead through a Tsubasa Yoshihira penalty awarded for a kick on Daichi Matsuoka by Takuro Uehara. But there was still time for Imabari to pull level before the break, Takatora Kondo scrambling it over the line after the home side had failed to clear a corner. And the visitors retook the lead with 14 minutes left when a shot by big defender Tomoya Ando was partially charged down by Katare rookie Kyosuke Kamiyama, only for Kazaki Nakagawa to pounce and volley in his 12th of the season. Final score, Toyama 2, Imabari 3, and since Michiharu Otageri took over as Katare coach, three wins have been followed by three defeats, a coach and horses driven through their previously excellent home record. Imabari bounced back well from two straight losses. The division's unexpected form team, though, are Vanrare Hachinohe. Their triumph at Azul Claro Numazu, meaning they now have 18 points from the last seven games. Attempting to play the ball out of defence, Numazu's Terukazu Shinozaki succeeded only in giving it to the speedy Ryusei Nose, who exchanged a 1-2 with Naoyuki Yamada and beat Hiromu Musha from 20 yards to give Hachinohe a 39th minute lead. Ryo Watanabe made it 2-0 from the penalty spot just before the hour, he himself having been upended in the area by Kenshiro Suzuki. 2 minutes later, Azul Claro netted a rare goal to give themselves a foothold in the game. Tatsuya Anzai's cut back from the byline, finding Tomoki Fujisaki, whose well-struck shot was deflected past Kazuki Hattori. Vanrare substitute Kai Sasaki had a goal ruled out for offside as the visitors saw out the win. Final score, Numazu 1, Hachinohe 2. Kazuhito Mochizuki's record as Azul Claro coach now stands at 1 win, 4 draws and 6 losses. In contrast, Ryo Shigaki's figures at Vanrare are 9 wins, no draws and 10 losses, which extrapolated across the whole season would put one of the division's smallest clubs above halfway in the standings. Rather closer to the bottom of the table, regular listeners will be familiar with Kamatamare Senoki conceding late goals to drop points, but seeing them recover from going 2 down in the 83rd minute to claim a draw is unknown territory. That's exactly what happened at home to Giramantsi Kitakyushu, though, meaning the Noodle Boys are now on a run of 4 unbeaten for the first time since June last year. Giramantsi had taken the lead through Yosuke Kamigata in the 53rd minute, a Yudai Nagano run catching the home defence off guard, his low-angled cross knocked in at the far post by Kamigata. It looked like the visitors were odds on to take the points when Yuya Takazawa headed in Ryo Sato's free kick to make it 2-0 with 7 minutes left. But with 88 minutes on the clock, Senoki captain Takaharu Nishino headed a free kick across the Kitakyushu box for Genichi Endo to loop a volley over Yuki Kato and in. And in the 90th minute, Nishino headed on Iki Kawasaki's long throw for Masatake Nishimoto to hit it home unchallenged at the far post. Final score, Senoki 2, Kitakyushu 2. Kamatamare remain third bottom, Giramantsi slip to 13th. And finally, SC Sagamihara against FC Gifu ended goalless and would probably still be goalless if they were playing now. The better chances fell to the home side. A 20-yard chip from J3's most elegant player, Jungo Fujimoto, going just over the crossbar. And then in the closing seconds, a dangerous cross by Kensei Ukita being well blocked by Kazushige Kirihata as former Gifu man Kensei Nakashima closed in. Final score, Sagami Hera 0, Gifu 0 to a profound extent. Early June and round 11 was when Sagami Hera last won at home. This Gifu squad remains in the lower half of the table. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 31. The top six teams are Iwaki with 69 points, then it's Fujieda and Matsumoto, both with 63. Kagoshima slip to fourth with 60, Imabari 56, and Toyama 54. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are in 15th, Numazu with 30 points, then it's Seneki with 26, Sagami Hana 25, and bottom with 24, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 32 fixtures over the weekend, when all the games are on Sunday the 6th of November. The top six teams all play each other. Iwaki will all but guarantee promotion if they can win at home to Kagoshima. Second place Fujieda are looking at a tough trip to Imabari. Matsumoto are at Toyama. Nagano have the chance to close the gap on that top six if they can win at home to Tottori. Ehime stage a Shikoku derby with Seneki. The two teams with the poorest current form in the division meet at Fukushima, where the visitors are Numazu. 10th against 11th for a classic mid-table game between Gifu and Miyazaki. Hachinohe can further extend their excellent run of results at home to YSCC. And finally, a match that, hard to believe perhaps, would have been in J2 last year, Kitakyushu against Sagami Hara. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.